I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Once again, Baltimore is rocked by a scandal at the highest level of government. Mayor Catherine Pugh has begun an indefinite leave of absence, citing the need to recover from pneumonia amid calls for her to resign permanently from officials in Baltimore and in Annapolis. New revelations about business dealings with the University of Maryland Medical System, Kaiser Permanente, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Maryland, and the Associated Black Charities have raised new questions about conflicts of interest. Governor Larry Hogan has asked the state prosecutor to launch a formal investigation. Today on Midday, my guests are City Councilman Leon Pinkett, former Maryland Deputy Attorney General Tharoo Vignaraja, and Kevin Rector of the Baltimore Sun. What's ahead for Mayor Pugh and the city she was elected to lead? First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Late yesterday afternoon, Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh stunned the city with an announcement that she would take an indefinite leave of absence. The statement from the mayor's office alluded to Ms. Pugh's deteriorating health. She was hospitalized for pneumonia last week for 5 days. The statement said that her physicians have advised her to take time off to recover. City Council President Jack Young became the city's ex officio mayor about 12 hours ago. City Council Vice President Sharon Green Middleton, who represents the 6th District, will assume the duties of City Council President for the time being. Ex officio Mayor Jack Young and the City Council are scheduled to hold a press conference today at City Hall in about 22 minutes. And joining me now is Councilman Leon Pinkett III. He represents the 7th District. Councilman Pinkett, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
So a couple of your colleagues on the council, Ryan Dorsey and Zeke Cohen, have called for Mayor Pugh to resign. Do you think she should do that as well?
Well, I have to say, obviously, that the recent news that's coming out of City Hall as it relates to the mayor is troubling, to say the least, especially during a time when our city has so many issues. It's critical that we have leadership that is transparent, that's focused, that the public can put its complete trust in. And with episode after episode, almost as we turn from day to day, finding new and more situations as it relates to these book deals, it's going to be difficult for the current mayor to lead the city in the direction that we need it to go. And so, I mean, obviously, I want all of the evidence, I want all the information to be on the table so that we can make the proper decision. But the public trust is at stake right now. And the mayor is going to have to, during this time where she's taking this leave of absence, to not only get her health right, and so my prayers are with her, through this health crisis, but she's got to really take a deep look at the future, not only of her own career, but the future of our city.
And your colleague on the council, Councilwoman Shannon Snead, has called for the Baltimore City Office of Inspector General to launch an investigation. Governor Hogan has asked the state prosecutor to launch an investigation. Have you spoken with any of your other colleagues on the council about any specific actions you think the council should take or is considering taking?
I'm totally in agreement with Councilwoman Snead and her call for an investigation. We are limited in the scope of our ability as it relates to the council being able to intervene in this. And so we do need for that investigation to take forth to see, if there was any ethical issues related to this or if there was some legal issues related to this. And so I'm looking forward to that investigation happen. But let me be clear about this as well. Even as we look at the leave of absence that the mayor is taken, and my total support is behind Council President now ascending to the ex officio role as mayor. But this city cannot afford a protracted or extended leave of absence. We need leadership in the mayor's office. We need leadership on the second floor of City Hall, and we need it now. The city is facing too many issues to not have leadership in place. And this isn't a statement related to, whether or not Mayor Pugh has done some good things for the city, and I believe that she has. And we can look at just this past 2 years of some things that she's been able to do. But right now, our city is distracted, discouraged, And we need for leadership to be in place. And so this cannot be an extended leave of absence.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My first guest today, Baltimore City Councilman Leon Pinkett. He represents the 7th District. And Councilman, just so I make sure I understand, do you think that the Baltimore City Inspector General's Office should have an investigation that is concurrent with the one that the state prosecutor has been asked to undertake? Or should the Baltimore City Inspector General wait for any results that may come from a state investigation?
No, I believe that both should run concurrently. And I think part of that is especially based upon the last information that came out related to Kaiser Permanente and the fact that the mayor was on the board of estimates making decisions, during that time and not necessarily revealing business relationships with those entities. And so I think that requires for us to take an internal look from the city government perspective as well.
And what is the actual practical effect on particular initiatives? For example, I think of this issue about the Roland Park bike lane, which Mayor Pugh decided, after reviewing options with the Department of Transportation, to tear down. That seems to be a decision that she made herself. Does something like that go forward now that she is, no longer serving, at least on a day-to-day basis?
I think that the general public should rest assured that the work of city government is not going to stop because of this. Matter of fact, I know my colleagues on the council, I know the council president, we are more focused to make certain that the city is not injured anymore from these indiscretions. And so the business of the city will move forward, and the leadership of the city will make certain that the people are prioritized.
Well, for example, in the specific case of the people in Roland Park, some of whom are very supportive of the bike lane, others of whom are very much against it, the mayor's decided to tear it down. Is that decision going to go on hold because the mayor herself is on hold?
I believe that. I don't know all of the details related to the Roland Park cycle track. I do believe that decision was made by the mayor. And so I don't anticipate that the council president would come and undo that particular decision. So I can't speak on that one in particular, but as it relates to the general business of the city, I think people should be confident that we will move the city forward in a way that protects the health and safety of all the residents.
One of the initiatives that Council President Jack Young was very much behind is the Children and Youth Fund for Baltimore City, which is using taxpayer money, some $13 million in its first year, to distribute to various groups around town who are doing work with children and youth to improve the city on a variety of fronts. There's a contract with the Associated Black Charities to administer that program. They're taking an administrative fee of, I believe, about $1.2 million. Do you have any concerns, given the recent revelations by reporting in the Baltimore Sun about the Associated Black Charities' involvement in this Healthy Holly scandal?
Right. And I think that at the end of the day, that this is maybe one of the biggest or most egregious injuries that will come out of this erosion of public trust, is that here we have a program, a project, the Youth Fund, which is a model program, which is providing resources to young people, to entities that in most cases weren't able to get the resources that they need to provide to communities and to our young people. And now, because of this indiscretion, because of these books, because of all of this situation that happened, we're talking more about the health of Holly, and now we're not talking about the health of Baltimore youth. And so I would hate for us to take either what happened with the Associated Black Charities or whatever happened with the mayor to now start looking at these programs and almost critiquing these programs, which are a tremendous benefit and asset to our community.
And what are your priorities then going to be moving forward in these next couple of weeks in the immediate aftermath of the mayor stepping aside, at least as a leave of absence at this point? There is mounting pressure for her to resign. If she doesn't resign in, say, 2 weeks, what are your priorities going to be?
The community that I represent and many residents throughout West Baltimore have been extremely focused on how do we drive investment to West Baltimore? How do we bring resources to West Baltimore? And we have made tremendous strides from everything related to the Pennsylvania Avenue corridor, bringing attention to our communities that we haven't seen in a while. And I refuse to allow anything that's coming out of the situation with the mayor to distract us from continuing to get those types of investments, to drawing the proper attention to our community. My focus has really been to lift up the hope of residents throughout West Baltimore and keep us engaged in a plan that we set forth to really revive our community.
And full disclosure, I live in West Baltimore, and you are my city councilman here in Baltimore, and I'm very happy about that.
You have a pretty good councilman.
Yeah, that's what I'm told by my city councilman. You have a press conference coming up with ex officio Mayor Young in about 15 minutes. Have you and the members of the council been briefed about a specific intent, a specific aspiration, specific topics for that press conference? Can you give us a little primer?
No, it's really a show that, as far as the council, we are unified in behalf of the residents of the city. This is not a time for personal agendas. This is not a time for politics. This is about putting the needs of the community first. And so I hope that press conference will be a sign that colleagues from East, West, North, and South are coming together to make certain that we put the needs of the city first, and that we work together to make certain that that's assured.
Baltimore City Councilman Leon Pinkett III, he will join his fellow city council members and ex officio Mayor Jack Young in a press conference scheduled to begin at City Hall in about 13 minutes. Emily Sullivan of the WYPR news team will have a report on that conference later today during All Things Considered. Councilman, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
We'll have more on the decision of Mayor Catherine Pugh to take a leave of absence when we come back after a quick break. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. Mayor Catherine Pugh's decision to step aside indefinitely came after the Baltimore Sun reported new revelations about sales of her children's books to Kaiser Permanente over a period of 3 years. In 2017, after the mayor had assumed office and had begun serving on the Board of Estimates, which approves city contracts, the company was awarded a $48 million contract to provide health benefits to city employees. So this news comes after the University of Maryland Medical System disclosed that it had purchased $500,000 worth of books in the same series written by the mayor, Healthy Holly. So now we're going to take a look at the legal ramifications for the mayor and others who are involved in the Healthy Holly scandal. Thiru Vignaraja is a former Maryland Deputy Attorney General and has also been both a federal and state prosecutor. Thiru, welcome back.
Great to be here, Tom. How's it going?
Doing fine, thank you. Although, like many folks in our city, very distressed about the developments over the last few weeks. Governor Hogan has called for an investigation. He actually called for that less than an hour before Mayor Pugh made her announcement yesterday afternoon. Is that the end of the story as to the jurisdiction, as to who will look into this matter? He's called for the state prosecutor to launch a formal investigation.
Yeah, it's a great question. This is a circumstance where there's very likely overlapping jurisdiction between a couple of different, both local and federal authorities. I think it was inevitable, whether it was a private citizen in the form of a former investigator who did it last week or the governor of Maryland who called upon the Office of State Prosecutor to investigate, it did seem clear that this was headed at least towards an investigation. Now, what that investigation uncovers is to be determined. But I think there's at least a couple of different authorities that are potentially involved here. The Office of the State Prosecutor is classically responsible for public corruption prosecutions of public officials. There's recent and longstanding examples of that here in Maryland. Federal prosecutors have gone after public officials, again, both in recent and older vintage, for violations of federal law. You also have state authorities. The comptroller's office obviously has tax investigators. There may be overlapping jurisdiction there as well. The Office of State Prosecutor is a perfectly reasonable place to start, but I wouldn't assume if I was Catherine Pugh or the citizens of Baltimore that that's the only authority that has jurisdiction over this matter.
People have thought that given the mayor's ambiguity about some of the financial dealings with places like the University of Maryland Medical System, that she may also be under suspicion for tax violations. She's stated that she's filed all of her taxes. But if, for example, the state prosecutor looks into this, can that office look into anything having to do with the IRS and what the mayor may or may not have reported as income or reported as business and, income and expenses for this yeah. Healthy Holly Inc.?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good place to start. When we're talking about violations of tax law, we're talking about both violations of state and or federal tax law. You pay taxes, obviously, to state authorities as well as to federal authorities, which is why both the comptroller as well as federal prosecutors have jurisdiction over this. You know, there's examples of this. When Commissioner D'Souza was prosecuted for failing to pay taxes and taking deductions that he was not entitled to take, that prosecution was brought by federal prosecutors here at the U.S. Attorney's Office in federal district court. That's where he pled. That's where he was sentenced. You can also violate state tax laws if there was, more income that should have been taxed because you inflated your expenses. For instance, if these books had not actually been printed, but there was a report of printing expenses, that would obviously be a really significant red flag for deflating your taxable income by inflating your expenses, and all of a sudden you've shortchanged both state government as well as federal government. Now, there's a lot of investigation to be done before anybody can say that. Not only does the mayor enjoy a presumption of innocence, she hasn't even been charged yet, so we shouldn't get too far ahead of ourselves. But those are the kinds of questions that we should be looking at and that no doubt investigators are likely to look at if those investigations commence.
If the mayor resigns, can she still be prosecuted?
Absolutely. When Commissioner D'Souza was indicted, there was an understanding that he was going to step away from his nomination. But that certainly wasn't the end of the discussion from a criminal perspective. Now, sometimes a public official will use their public office or their status in public office almost as a bargaining chip. You know, one of the things that prosecutors do care about is making sure that the person is removed from office or is, unable to serve again. I think that was part of the sentencing when Mayor Dixon was criminally prosecuted. So being in office may give you something to have a conversation with when prosecutors come a calling to be able to say as part of the plea negotiation, I will agree to step down instead of trying to go to trial while still in office. But certainly stepping down doesn't end criminal liability at all. And prosecutors, may have more time. They may not sort of feel like the election cycle is a factor in the timing of their indictment. But I don't think it changes the question of whether or not there's an investigation that's proper or whether or not jurisdiction exists.
Yvonne Wenger, one of the team of reporters in the Baltimore Sun doing a great job covering this story, just published a thing on the Sun website about a half hour ago talking about whether or not if the mayor does not resign, can she be removed from office? And, for example, in the state level, the Maryland General Assembly does have the authority to impeach the governor, or the lieutenant governor, or the comptroller. But the city council's authority seems to be much less clear. And it seemed the headline of the Sun says, without a conviction, it's complicated. So it sounds like the mayor would have to undergo an indictment, a prosecution, and then the result of the trial might be the only thing that leads to a determination about removing her from office.
Yeah, Tom, I mean, this is a terrible chapter for Baltimore, and perhaps the only thing more tragic is that this is not the only terrible chapter of this kind, even in recent vintage, between the police commissioner between one of Mayor Pugh's former campaign aides, the former mayor, Mayor Dixon. All of these are folks that have given us a roadmap of how this happens. And there are different routes. I mentioned the federal authorities' jurisdiction over potential federal tax fraud, or the comptroller's jurisdiction over state tax fraud. The Office of the State Prosecutor is the one that brought charges against the campaign aide of Mayor Pugh in a circumstance where, that individual pled guilty just a day before trial. That was for campaign violations. Those are also criminal. There, of course, is the example of the former superintendent of schools in Baltimore County, Dallas Dance. That was a case where the Office of the State Prosecutor, again, brought a prosecution for failing to disclose income, $147,000, on mandatory disclosure forms. And because you sign those under penalty of perjury, you've committed perjury when you do that. And so the Office of the State Prosecutor would have jurisdiction over that. And in a lot of these instances, like Dallas Dance, the person steps away from office, frankly, trying to spare the city the tumult of another trial. But that hasn't always happened. We've had to go to trial against prior public officials to get them out of office. And prosecutors, in and around the state know how to do that. And they've done that before. But the investigation is the right place to start. The governor is right to call for an investigation. A former private investigator, investigator with this Office of the State, Office of the State Prosecutor, has called for an investigation. Last week, I flagged a number of questions that I thought the mayor needed to answer if she was going to remain in office. She apparently, upon advice of counsel, has demurred on those questions, which means we've got a lot of question marks for the public circle. But those are questions that prosecutors and investigators have lots of tools to get to the bottom of.
It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest now is Thiru Vignaraja. He's a former Maryland Deputy Attorney General and a federal and state prosecutor. And Thiru Vignaraja, it's also true that you're contemplating a run for mayor. We should make that clear as well. Is that something that's front of mind with you these days?
I think that's a question for another day. Folks have asked me about this. There's such a deficit of leadership. There's such a need for a sense of urgency. We've got a city in real crisis. But I think that's a conversation for another day. This week, people are trying to heal and try to bring our city back together. We have a mayor in flux. We don't know whether she's going to eventually resign or whether or not Jack Young is going to stay in that role. This is the kind of uncertainty we had last year when we had a police commissioner in flux. It's paralyzing for the agencies that are looking for leadership. And so I think we have to get through this week before we start talking about elections next year.
I spoke yesterday with a former member of the State Ethics Commission who used the term, you can't unring the bell when it comes to the amendment forms, the amendments to disclosure forms that the mayor filed after the Baltimore Sun story broke on the 13th of March. There was a Friday night in that week where she amended seven different forms. As a prosecutor, when it comes to, for example, her dealings with the University of Maryland medical system, does it matter to you that the idea for purchasing these books came from the medical system? And is it different if that idea came from the mayor? In other words, if the mayor approached the executive, the CEO of the UMMS, Mr. Krenchik, and said, I have these books, I'd like the system to purchase them. Is that a separate and very different kettle of fish than if Mr. Krenchik, on behalf of the UMMS, came to the mayor and said, we understand you've written a children's book, we'd like to purchase it and distribute it to children?
I think that's the kind of fact that would be a factor for certain criminal theories, but perhaps not others. I mentioned tax fraud before. I mentioned the perjury because of a mandatory disclosure failure. I had mentioned the campaign finance violations where, a nonprofit can't give money to a campaign. So a question that I think the mayor may need to answer is whether or not when that nonprofit gives money to your LLC, and then you take that money from the nonprofit and give it to other campaigns, whether that is, the equivalent of a straw purchase, if it's an indirect violation of the campaign finance laws. Those are the kinds of things that we've talked about so far. The bribery statutes, where you have to prove a quid pro quo, that's the kind of theory that might implicate your observation right there, Tom. You know, you've got to establish what the quid was, you've got to establish what the quo was, and you've got to establish there was a corrupt intent in that exchange. And so who asked who what becomes relevant to that. I don't think it bears on your obligation to disclose collateral income on your ethics disclosure when you're a public official. You know, frankly, Dallas Dance learned that the hard way. That was $147,000. This is not, you know, you gave a speech and you got a $1,000 stipend for it, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars over multiple years. I think that's something that the mayor and her counsel are going to need to at least answer questions to. There may very well be a good explanation. This is why we have investigations and trials. There is a presumption of innocence. But those are the kinds of questions, from what we know now, people are going to be looking at. And unfortunately, we know less than we perhaps need to, because the mayor, perhaps for understandable reasons, has stopped answering questions.
When it comes to intent, for example, Kevin Rector, who's going to be on the show in just a little bit today from the Baltimore Sun, reported that Kaiser Permanente, which received a $48 million contract to provide health benefits to city employees, they have had relationships with the city dating back to the 1980s. But this particular contract, which I believe began last year in 2018, was approved by the mayor while she was on the Board of Estimates at the same time, or just after, Kaiser Permanente had purchased $114,000 worth of these books. So as a prosecutor, how do you draw the line between the intent to purchase the books for the purpose of currying favor with the mayor who sits on the Board of Estimates who approves the contract?
You know, whether it's a bribery case or a murder case or, you know, any number of other kinds of cases, intent is always a significant threshold determination that a jury needs to make, that a prosecutor needs to think about. But I'd remind listeners of two things. Number one, there are jury instructions that remind juries that intent is rarely proved by a person writing on a contract, "I intend to kill someone" or "I intend to bribe someone." Intent is usually inferred, as the jury's instruction goes, from the circumstances. This is the kind of thing that the juries of your peers get to make reasonable determinations about what you were trying to accomplish. And in that regard, patterns matter. Specific facts and timing matters. So when you did something, who else might have done it? Take, for example, sponsoring legislation. If you are the only sponsor of a particular piece of legislation, that legislation seems to benefit somebody who has been providing you, you know, financial contributions, and those financial contributions are not public, you have at least two problems. One is the public doesn't know who's, you know, buttering your bread, and therefore doesn't know what your agenda is and why you might believe a particular piece of legislation is good or bad. But it's also a circumstance that gives rise to the inference that if you're not disclosing it, you may be trying to hide it. And that's the kind of thing that prosecutors use to establish corrupt intent, which is one of the requirements to establish, you know, under Maryland bribery statutes, the federal fraud statutes. That's the kind of thing you need to prove to a jury. It's not easy, because you rarely say, my goal is to accomplish something. But if a person is pulling a gun, if they're putting off a mask, those are the kinds of things that a prosecutor would point to as evidence that their intent was premeditation.
We have an email from Julie. In terms of the kinds of charges that investigators might look into, Julie says, is Mayor Pugh's and UMMS's behavior campaign malfeasance? It would appear that these many thousands of books, assuming they were distributed to city school students, were essentially campaign materials, since the books delivered to the system were all delivered prior to her 2016 campaign for mayor. Is that the kind of lineage and linkage that prosecutors might look into as a campaign violation rather than as a ethics violation from doing business with someone on whose board you serve?
Yeah, I mean, last week, again, I flagged four different theories: the tax dimension, the mandatory disclosure and therefore the perjury dimension, the bribery dimension that we just talked about, and the last one is campaign violations, which, again, can be criminal in character. I said it a couple of times, Tom. I just want to urge listeners to to remember that this is the third inning of a doubleheader when it comes to the investigation. We know very little. We don't know where this is going, and there is a presumption of innocence. At the same time, this is the mayor of a major city who needs to come clean and answer certain questions. And I think one of those questions is when a nonprofit that is barred and would surrender its nonprofit designation, if it were to make a campaign contribution to a political campaign, were to do that by accomplish that same goal by giving money to the mayor's LLC, which then gave money to the mayor's campaign, you know, that doesn't look great, and there has to be an answer to that. And if there isn't an answer to that, then I think investigators and prosecutors are going to be looking hard at whether or not that constituted a campaign finance violation. Remember, it was one of the mayor's own aides that had to plead guilty to campaign finance violations in the course of her last campaign for mayor. And, you know, unfortunately, these are not isolated instances in our city's history. And if we're going to take transparency seriously, if we're going to root out corruption, if we're going to take care of the kinds of things that we need to rebuild trust in Baltimore City, it has to start at the top. And so it's appropriate for the public to be asking these questions. I just want to encourage folks to give investigators and prosecutors a chance to do their job, to thoroughly look at all of the angles and all of the dimensions before bringing public charges. This is not something that's going to be litigated in the press. It's got to be done in a courtroom if, in fact, it ends up in a criminal forum.
Tharu Vignaraja, he's a former Maryland Deputy Attorney General and a federal and state prosecutor. Tharu, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Great to be on, Tom.
Quick break. When we return, a member of the Baltimore Sun team that has been covering this story since they broke it the week before last, Kevin Rector, joins me. When we come back, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about Mayor Pugh and the city that is reeling from this latest scandal in Baltimore City Hall. Coming up tomorrow on midday, we'll have more on the decision by Mayor Catherine Pugh to take a leave of absence. She is recovering from pneumonia, and we all hope that she will recover completely and as soon as possible. But whether or not she can recover politically is an open question, given the flood of revelations about her business dealings while in the Senate and as mayor. She will have a lot of questions to answer, and questions will arise about whether she has enough credibility to govern effectively. By the way, tomorrow in our continuing coverage of this unfolding story, we will speak with other members of the Baltimore City Council. I'll talk to Delegate Nick Mosby of the Baltimore City Delegation in Annapolis and George Nielsen, the former Baltimore City Solicitor. A little background. When Sheila Dixon resigned following a misdemeanor conviction in 2010, she was the mayor, she resigned. Then City Council President Stephanie Rawlings Blake took office, promising to restore credibility and accountability to City Hall. She completed Dixon's term and then easily won election for a full term in 2011. Then, having lost a lot of public support for her handling of the violence and uprising that took place in the spring of 2015, Rawlings, by the way, she has since divorced and is no longer using the name Blake, Rawlings decided not to run in the 2016 mayoral election. Sheila Dixon did run, as did Catherine Pugh, who was then a state senator. They ran in a crowded primary field, but these two veteran political figures led the race the entire way. Catherine Pugh won the primary due in large part to a lot of voters' skittishness about Ms. Dixon's ethical violations. And now, just 3 years later, Ms. Pugh faces an avalanche of ethical questions of her own. Joining me on the phone from the Sun newsroom in Port Covington, Kevin Rector. He's a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. He's been part of the team that has done incredible reporting over the last couple of weeks. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom.
So, first of all, do we have any update on the health of Catherine Pugh? She was released from the hospital, but have we heard anything specifically about how she's doing?
I've not heard any updates since the last press release was put out by her office indicating she was taking a leave of absence related to her illness. She has, over time, responded in different ways directly to different reporters, and much of our requests directed to her these days are going through her attorney.
Mike Bush, we should mention, who's the Speaker of the House, is also in the hospital for pneumonia. So it seems to be going around in political circles, and we wish them all the best. Let's listen to a little bit, Kevin, of Catherine Pugh's press conference last week. I guess it was on the 28th, in which she apologized for what's going on. And she made a statement that you did some reporting on subsequently that we'll talk about on the other side.
I want to say at the start, I understand the objections and some of the concerns of many over my decision to enter into a financial relationship with the University of Maryland Medical System to produce Healthy Holly children's book series. And I sincerely want to say that I apologize that I've done something to upset the people of Baltimore that I love, care about, and work hard every day for. I also want to make it very clear, I never intended to do anything that could not stand up to scrutiny. And that's why I disclosed this on my University of Maryland Medical System disclosure statement, all monies received. It really was about a shared mission, one that I'm excited to share, and one that has been a part of my life for quite a long time.
So, Kevin Richter, you reported yesterday that University of Maryland Medical System was not the only client, was not the only concern that purchased books. Tell us about the relationship between the mayor and Kaiser Permanente.
Well, that press conference was focused on the UMMS deals that had already been reported previously by some of my colleagues to about $500,000 worth of book deals. What we were able to report yesterday is that there was also a book deal that the mayor had struck with Kaiser for about $114,000. That was over a period of years, and during that same time frame, Kaiser won a $48 million contract with the city to provide health coverage for city employees.
Has the mayor or anyone on behalf of the mayor explained how it is that while Kaiser was being considered for this contract, which, as you mentioned, totaled $48 million, the mayor was in conversations with them at the very least, or had received money for these books. At the same time, she was on the Board of Estimates, and she did not recuse herself from any consideration of the Kaiser contract proposal, as most folks think she should have. Has anybody responded on her behalf to that question?
The only response we've received from the mayor was through her attorney, Stephen Silverman, and it was specific only to one question. In addition to our reporting about Kaiser, we also reported that there was also a book deal with Associated Black Charities, I think for a total of about $78,000. And one of the questions both of the Kaiser and the Associated Black Charities deals raised for us was whether or not these books were the product of a subsequent printing or were the same books that had been previously purchased by UMMS. Part of what reporters at The Sun have been trying to do for weeks now is account for where all of the books that were paid for have gone. We've yet to be able to do that. So learning of yet more book sales that the mayor had with Kaiser and Associated Black Charities, that made the total volume of books that we've been unable to account for even larger. The mayor has produced documentation for about 60,000 copies of books, all of which would have fallen under the UMMS contract. The total volume of books that should have been printed under all of these contracts is substantially larger than 60,000, closer to 100,000, if not more. So our question was, was the mayor taking books that had been printed once for one customer, being UMMS, and then reselling them. The only comment we've received from her office in relation to the Kaiser and the Associated Black Charities deals was that it was not the case that she had sold to them books that had already been purchased by UMMS. Other than that, she nor her office nor her attorney have spoken to our reporting from yesterday as to the Kaiser and Associated Black Charities purchases.
And when it comes to Associated Black Charities, let's unpack it a little bit. They collected this money from different entities, including Care First Blue Cross Blue Shield, which also has a contract with the city, to buy and distribute in some way maybe 10,000 copies. That was the reporting that you all had yesterday of these books. So how does this work? Associated Black Charities collected money from these different groups and then paid the mayor and took a little bit for itself. Is that also how it happened?
Right. So Associated Black Charities confirmed to The Sun yesterday that they had collected funding from five entities that they have not identified. We've reported that one of them was Care First, Blue Cross, Blue Shield. But Associated Black Charities collected money from five entities totaling more than $90,000, or about $90,000, actually. It retained a little bit more than $9,000 for its role in helping to distribute what it said were 4,500 copies of the book, a few hundred of which were water damaged. It said that it left the remaining 5,500 copies of the books that it had purchased with this collected money to Healthy Holly LLC, which is the mayor's company, to distribute on its own.
And Blue Cross Blue Shield, First Care First, has also admitted that, or confirmed, as you say, that they spent about $14,500 several years ago, 2011, 2014. And at the same time, they also, like Kaiser, had a contract. Theirs was worth $522 million. So again, does that raise the same kinds of questions of currying favor with a public official while doing business with them?
It's always hard to, I think you were speaking about this with one of your previous guests, it's always hard to identify intent, right? So part of what we do as reporters is look at what is on the record, in documents, before boards like the city's Board of Estimates, which is its spending panel, to see what these entities that are involved in making payments for Healthy Holly books were doing vis-a-vis the city. You know, what kind of business were they doing? There are certain cases through the years where intent has been able to be identified. We're not there at this point yet in this instance, and we may never get there. But it's strange to see the mayor essentially come forward to have a news conference to sort of face the music and apologize for her deal with UMMS, calling it a regrettable mistake. Days after she had told me directly that she felt this was all a big witch hunt. It's strange to see her have that press conference and make no mention of the fact that there are multiple other deals to the tune of $100,000 for more books that had never been disclosed, and to move forward as if they never existed. She told me that UMMS was her only purchaser of books. So here we are. We've reported that there were more books. We've reported the other connections the entities that paid for these books have with the city. And to some extent, you know, we as reporters place that information before our readers, and our readers can draw whatever conclusions they'd like.
Jack Young and the city council finished a very short press conference that started about 20 minutes ago at City Hall. It lasted less than 10 minutes by my calculation. Earlier today, he was in, ex officio Mayor Young was in Annapolis, and he assured people when asked that he is not running for mayor himself, that he intends to run for president of city council in the next election. By my calculation, at least by the time we went on the air, there were four officials who had called for the mayor's resignation: Peter Francho and Kathy Shalega, a Democrat and a Republican in Annapolis, and then two members of the city council, Zeke Cohen and Ryan Dorsey. Have you heard any other people also calling for the mayor to resign at this point?
I have not been keeping track of all the various voices out there who are calling for various different things from the mayor. What we're trying to do is focus on what is before the city at the moment. Right now, the mayor says she's on a leave of absence. I know there is some speculation out there as to whether that is an incremental step towards something more permanent, like a permanent step down from her post or a resignation. There are also individuals out there calling for her resignation. The governor yesterday called for an investigation by the state prosecutor. There are a lot of balls in the air at the moment, and we are trying to keep track of all of them, but I don't have a full list of those calling for her resignation.
Luke Broadwater, the guy who broke this story on the 13th of March, published a piece yesterday examining what bills then-Senator Catherine Pugh sponsored in the General Assembly while she was in this relationship with Kaiser Permanente and University of Maryland Medical System. Can you summarize what Luke's reporting had to say about that?
Well, what Luke found was that during a time in which Mayor Pugh served in the state Senate, there were bills before her that would have benefited hospitals within the medical system from which she was receiving payments for the books that she sold. Again, this is similar to the contracted money that we were just discussing, the $48 million contract that Kaiser had gotten, the $522 million contract that CareFirst had gotten. There are clear connections related to legislation that came before Pugh and which she sponsored in the General Assembly in Annapolis that would have benefited entities from which she was receiving money for her books. Whether or not that was a sort of trade-off, a quid pro quo, some sort of nefarious deal between her and these entities, that's not something that was in the story. But
that remains to be seen, doesn't it? Yeah. Kevin Rector is part of a great team at the Baltimore Sun that has been doing phenomenal reporting on this very, very huge story. Kevin, thank you so much. We appreciate the reporting, and we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll continue our coverage of the leave of absence of Mayor Catherine Pugh tomorrow on Midday. We'll talk to George Nielsen, the former Baltimore City Solicitor. Nick Mosby, a member of the city delegation in the Maryland General Assembly, will also join us, and we'll catch up with another member of the Baltimore City Council. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared has been recently recognized by the Daily Meal. Menu and hours at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.